Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. In studio with me is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis, but we should point out before we get too far into the show that this week's program has been pre-recorded, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls this week. You may, though, email questions at any time for any of our four mayors to our email address, ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, how are you? Good afternoon.
Good. How are you doing, Stan?
Pretty good, thanks. Let's get right into a couple of questions that have come in from listeners since you were on the program last. Arnold has written in and says, if one walks down the hill on the new trail on Happy Hollow Road and wishes to turn right into the park, you're forced to share the road with vehicles. There's a fence, he says, which makes it difficult to get onto the grass to walk. He says also vehicles coming down the road who make a right turn into the park might have difficulty seeing pedestrians. I've requested the city engineer to fix this problem, but have not seen any action. What do you think? He wants to know.
Well, actually, we've had quite a bit of conversation about that particular spur of the trail and, more importantly, with that access point into Happy Hollow. We just finished up the entire road work, and we did, as Arnold, I'm sure, is well aware, we did a lot of work to make Happy Hollow a little more narrow and more conducive to bike and pedestrian traffic. And with that understanding in mind, it's not quite done yet. What we're looking to do next, if you can visualize Happy Hollow Trail as you're heading down towards River Road, there's a barren area after you get a little east of the entranceway. That is going to be a continuation of the trail network. That wasn't actually budgeted into the project, so we're going through the Redevelopment Commission to get that additional funding for that. And once that's done, that will provide for an access point for bikes and pedestrians that aren't necessarily that doesn't involve sharing the roadway with the cars as they're turning in there. We're also looking at changing that entrance point into the park as well, because we realize when it has that severe corner, once you get in, that creates a challenge for vehicles as they do try to enter and exit the park. When they're exiting the park, it can actually be an issue of vision because you're actually going up a slight incline. And as you're entering, it just sort of slopes down to the point where you might not be able to see pedestrians if they should be on the right side of the road. So, and so far as Arnold's question goes, it's something that we're aware of. It's something that we're going to address, and our hopes are to address it sometime, if not this year, early next construction season.
A couple of questions from Jim now, who's written in. He says, will there be any additional signage or safety measures installed for pedestrians on the city's roundabouts? He says, if a pedestrian tries to cross in a clockwise fashion, they appear to be in danger. Drivers are only looking to the left and don't see pedestrians trying to cross the street from the right. He says, I've watched several pedestrians literally run for their lives.
Well, we can always look at that and see what we can do to make them more safe. The whole concept of a roundabout, obviously, is the entry speed has to be pretty slow. Generally speaking, unless it's on a major arterial, the entry speed's usually around 25 miles an hour. And one would hope that the operators of the vehicles are taking in everything, because you're going to have oncoming traffic from one direction. You have to merge as you come through. And it really is just a matter of practice. The other issue is pedestrians. We have marked areas where pedestrians can cross. And although it is there for the purpose of providing pedestrians an opportunity to get engaged in a safe fashion with traffic, it's always critical that people look both ways, because unfortunately, no matter how much signage, no matter if we even put electronic signals at intersections, there's always motorists who are more engaged with something going on in their car than what's going on around them. So we will try to do the best that we can to make sure that cars slow down before they enter, and also to make sure that they are aware that it's a high pedestrian area, specific in the ones around campus.
It is one of those, it seems, inherent dangers of putting in a roundabout instead of a standard four-way crossing intersection where you'd have crosswalks and things like that.
Yeah, that, and because it's relatively new here. You know, conceptually speaking, although people come from countries that have a ton of roundabouts.
Or from Carmel,
good point. It's conceptually a new idea. So the learning curve, I think we're still experiencing that. But I think, if we do what we can do, obviously with engineering and some communication in the area of the roundabout, pedestrians do what they can do, which is be aware of their surroundings and be cautious when they're entering areas where there's a lot of cars around. And the motorists do what they can do, which is pay attention to their surroundings. I think it's all going to be a much better environment.
Jim has also written in with a couple of questions about development. He says, with the construction of new 10 and 16-story apartment buildings in West Lafayette, I'm wondering how much money has been set aside for new fire equipment for the fire department. I think there might have been somebody who asked a similar question like this last month. And in the intervening time, we, of course, have had that horrific apartment building fire in London where so many people were killed. And you saw the story the other day that Arconic is now deciding to not build that sort of housing, that sort of that exterior sheeting that led to some of that the problem in London. And so what, if anything, is the instruction that is given to people who are building these new buildings in West Lafayette? We talked on the on show a month or two ago about interior fire support in terms of sprinklers, and you know there's all sorts of fire blocks that you can use.
Sure.
But what about the exterior construction and making sure that that doesn't become a problem?
Well, regardless of its size, if it's a residential structure, a single family residential, or a multi-unit apartment complex, they all have to be built to code. And I know this kind of sounds like almost cliche anymore because, you know, with the government regulatory stuff that we do for a living, but they can't put things up unless they pass inspection. And not the fire department actually is responsible for inspecting the building, as well our engineering office, when it's completed to make sure that it does meet code. And the products that go into this are generally provided by people who do that for a living. And in other words, they would not sell you something that's combustible to build a building with.
Are we talking city code, state code,
city,
all of the
state,
above?
All the above, yeah.
All right.
There's all kinds of different things that go into building a building. And then the other side of it is that the individual units themselves are designed to contain fire. There's this term that firefighters use. It's called burned in place. And what that means is that a building has these different mechanisms that, hypothetically speaking, if a room was to catch fire, they have mechanisms in place where they could actually contain that fire within that particular component of the building. And then, as you know, you had said earlier, the buildings are all going to be plumbed with all different kinds of fire suppression equipment so that that would not happen. In London, it's my understanding that the material that was used actually contributed to the flame.
That is, I believe, the finding of the investigators.
Yeah, and we don't roll that way.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're chatting today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We have pre-recorded this program, so we cannot take your phone calls this week, but you can always email questions for any of our four mayors to ask@WBAA.org, and you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. We had a job candidate here at the station who was in town a couple of weeks ago, and I was showing her around West Lafayette and telling her about all the ways the town is going to be different here in the next couple of years. And I began to ask myself a question that I'm now going to put to you, which is, how are you going to know when to stop? How are you going to know how different is too different?
How big is big?
Right.
Well, man, that's a good question. And if your a potential employee had the wisdom and the vision to ask that, you ought to hire her, you know?
No, unfortunately, it's my question and not hers.
Well, then, then you need to stick around. There is such a thing as urban sprawl. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing. I mean, cliche, cliche, cliche. And we're acutely aware of that. And I don't want to sound, you know, like a hard guy or anything, but we say no much more than we say yes. We're in one of those enviable positions of any city in the country where people are knocking our doors down to come here to develop. And they bring in these beautiful pictures and they say that they're going to, you know, do all these amazing things and they're going to change this and recreate that and contribute to this and have this. And the fact of the matter is that if we were to just sit there and either not pay attention at all or to say, sure, come on board, the spirit of West Lafayette would just go away. We would become, you know, either West Lafayette Inc. or something that none of us could be very proud of. You know, early on when we first started doing this thing almost 10 years ago, we realized that we were deficient in some areas and people made it abundantly clear. Every time we did any kind of a sensing session with our citizens, whether it be our student residents or our long-term residents, one of the issues that we had was a lack of retail opportunities. Also, they wanted to have some more franchise restaurants. But beyond that, they really weren't overly interested in getting the overdevelopment concept of our community. We then felt that it was incumbent upon us to put this in that densely populated area, which is in the near campus area up and down State Street. And we're not going to stray from that. You know, we believe that, sure, you know, from what our data has told us, the kids, they want to be around each other. You know, they want to be in a rather densely populated area. They want to be able to walk to and from, you know, their retail opportunities and class, of course. But they also want to have it look kind of cool. And they also want to be able to ride their bikes, and they also want to be able to be, you know, have something that they're proud of. It's been a couple years ago, but some years ago, we were ranked the worst city in the Big Ten. Yay us. Well, we don't want to be that anymore. You know, we want to try and make it something that we can all be proud of, but we're not going to do it by putting West Lafayette on steroids to try and accomplish that.
So let me put it to you this way. This is a quick story about me. I come from a city that had kind of languished for some time.
You're supposed to go a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, not that long ago in my lifetime. I came from a city that had, I'm from a town called Elgin, Illinois, mm-hmm. famous from the Elgin Watch Factory, which was a powerhouse economic generator early part of the 20th century.
Yeah, yeah.
It closed in the 1970s, and mm-hmm. the city had a big, big problem all of a sudden. And for about 25 years, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, city had no money, city couldn't figure out what to do. Mm-hmm. And then, lo and behold, a riverboat casino. And all of this money started flowing in, more money than the city could spend. And the interesting thing about it was, and the thing that I'm wondering if you're going to run into is, mm-hmm. I agree with you that people are beating down your door. Mm-hmm. But there always seems to be something that's out of reach. No matter how much money I see that a city has, mm-hmm. it seems like there's always that next thing that you could almost quite mm-hmm. grasp it mm-hmm. if we just did these mm-hmm. other things. Mm-hmm. And cities, I know for a fact, maintain lists and maintain mm-hmm. plans that say, if we had X amount of dollars, mm-hmm. we would do these 19 things.
If not for this.
Precisely.
Exactly,
So you have what seems like you are the goose that laid the golden egg at mm-hmm. this point. Mm-hmm. How do you know when to stop going down that list and when it becomes urban sprawl or when you lose the character of the city? How would it be mm-hmm. that a city council member might just not say, you know, somebody like a Nick DeBoer mm-hmm. who represents a fair amount of this mm-hmm. this change,
sure.
why not accept an argument if Nick were to make it that says, this is the new character of West Lafayette. After all, Mayor Dennis, we're building a downtown from scratch. Mm-hmm. Of course we are different than what we used to be. We were trying to be different. Mm-hmm. How do you know where that line is?
Well, we actually go through a process when we have these conversations, and luckily enough, council's involved, and Nick is intimately involved. He and I actually go out to lunch from time to time, and we have very spirited debates about what the future of our city should be. But we have enterprise zones. We have areas that are dedicated specifically for that type of development. And I'm a pretty strong believer in saying this is where it's got to fit. And plus, remember, West Lafayette is one of those cities because of Purdue to where we have a lot of intermingling of development, a lot of intermingling of concepts of quality of life. We have neighborhoods that interact positively with apartment areas. We've got academic areas that have city parks and things around them. I mean, the whole idea of trying to strip that concept and then just go bigger, better, faster, stronger, I don't think it, not only would I not support it, obviously, but I don't even think the community would support it. And it's true. I mean, really, anymore with the way things have changed in the state of Indiana, you know, local government is really almost at the will of developers when it comes to generating revenue. We don't raise taxes anymore. That's done by the state. You know, our options of generating revenue to provide services are really limited. And one of the best ways to do it is through development. And that's why I'm sure all the mayors that come on this program say, you know, we're ripe for development. Come to my city. Everything's great. We're doing all these things to bring in more development. But you have to be aware of what that development's going to do.
All right,
and you
so
have
let me,
to be aware of how long that development's going to be prospering, too.
Let me ask you about a possible flashpoint in that debate, because I think you have accurately characterized it. We reported in the last week about Vaughn's Shops, which mm-hmm. is one of the very few long-surviving businesses still along State Street. They have had some severe financial trouble this summer. Our reporter, Annie Ropeek, did a story where she talked to John von Erdmannsdorf, who owns the place. He says sales are off 50%. He's had to lay off several staff. Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder a little bit, and forgive the cynical-sounding nature of this question, mm-hmm. I have to wonder if the city cares. Mm-hmm. And it's not a heartless thing. It's if someone were to come in and say, boy, if that weren't there, we could tear down that old building and we could put up something that would generate so much more tax revenue for the city in the long term. Isn't it better for the city in some ways to let such a business fall by the wayside so that you can put in an urban Target, the holy grail of a Trader Joe's?
Yeah, the Trader. Oh, dude,
right.
Please
I
not.
Mean, so I mean, the city has something of a perverse incentive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
doesn't
really
it?
Is. It's a negative positive. You know, because it is. It's that carrot that's constantly dangling out there, and you're seeing, you know, more police cars, more firefighters, and et cetera, et cetera. But we learned a long time ago that being best isn't necessarily being new. You know, we have a historic preservation commission. We go into our neighborhoods and we look at some of these houses that have been rental properties forever. And we take them back up and we make them nice again. We have the caretaker's house at the cemetery up on top of Salisbury Hill. It is in horrible shape, and we're going to put that back together. We care. We you know, if Vaughn's and the other businesses up and down State Street right now are losing business, we will do whatever we can. And we, you know, to say that we don't care is wrong. To say that we're doing everything we can is accurate, but saying does that change things?
But economically
that's weird.
Speaking, it's a little bit like it's a little bit like municipal crocodile tears. Oh, boo hoo! Mm-hmm. This business that is perhaps not all that profitable, but locally beloved, would go away. But you can put something right back in it that's going to generate, as you say, more police cars, more fire trucks, things like that.
Mm-hmm. But my point is that that's not our intent. You know, we like having Vaughn's there. Vaughn's was there when I was a little kid, you know. It's not something that we're looking to do. You know, our intent with State Street, and we've gone over this a bajillion times, is to try and make it better. You know, we're trying to make West Lafayette better. We're trying to give it a sense of place. We're trying to remove some of the stigma of being a college community by providing something new and kind of neat for everybody that's here. And it's the process is uncomfortable, and it takes time. And there's really not much more that we can do, you know. I mean, I know that Eric Carlson's been on the show before, our director of development, and he is going door to door continuously to try and figure out what can we do, what's happening, how's things going. We've had some outside interest come in just to put on performances in our area, on both sides of the river, to try and attract attention to it. Everything that we're in a position to do, short of subsidizing it with cash, we're doing.
And just to be clear, you're not in a position to do that?
No, we can't do that.
Okay.
No, we can't do that. Not with tax dollars.
Well, because you've done the big thing, which is tear up the road.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
And that is bigger than any other thing, positive or negative, that could be done.
In any community, if you go down to your business district and redo your business district and you're doing it by taking out infrastructure, it's going to hurt. And it's going to hurt. It doesn't matter if it's in New York or if it's in New Goodrich. It's still going to hurt. And so a lot of communities just shrug their shoulders and say, sorry, it's progress. You know, but we don't roll that way. We try to do as much as we can for our
businesses. But you're kind of admitting that there's really not a lot you can do.
Well, I mean, short of covering his loss, of course. But we're doing more than most cities would. And our hope is that that's going to have some sort of benefit.
On to another thing I want to spend a good portion of our last 10 minutes on, which is the talk recently about a mobile needle exchange unit.
Yeah.
County officials say there's enough supplies for both a mobile unit and a physical unit, but neither one of those has happened. And I wanted to get your opinion on why neither has been established yet, months and months after the county said it was okay to have a needle exchange.
Well, my presumption is that after the meeting they held earlier – was it earlier this week or late last week? It looked like they were going to the mobile option.
Well, right. But the problem, they say, is that neither your city nor Lafayette wants to even have temporary spaces where the mobile unit can locate. That was what was said at the meeting, was we have yet to get buy-in from either city on even temporarily having this thing in a small area for a defined period of time.
Well, it probably gets back to the original argument of what the structure of the program is going to be, and we've ridden that horse to death. But the issue of where it needs to be really hasn't changed that much. You know, if the community is going to support a needle exchange program, whether it be on wheels or whether it be in a building, it has to be where there's a market. And it has to be where the problem exists. And it has to be where they're going to do some good.
Well, I mean, we clearly have plenty of people who have hepatitis C in this county. We have plenty of people who are injection drug users.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we clearly have a need.
Yeah, and nobody's arguing that. But I think right now, you know, really, Stan, I think what the presumption is that if you plant it, it's going to bring evil. And I don't know what the data says. I don't know if there's been anybody that's had enough time to monitor needle exchange programs. I know there's a lot of negative, you know, feelings and negative connotations with them because you're dealing with a population base that really isn't very reliable. And you're dealing with a population base that in some cases really isn't that pro-social. And I know that there is a stigma with certain groups when they're asking for help. And I also realize that there are certain areas of the community, and I'm talking both sides of the river and out into Tippecanoe County, who are adamantly against having that in their area. There's also a presumption that if you have that there, it's going to bring more crime.
So just to answer your question, the data says it does not, in fact, bring more crime. The data says it brings down the incidence of disease transmission. Mm-hmm. It helps to stop a hepatitis C outbreak from becoming an HIV outbreak, things like that. Mm-hmm. How do you and Mayor Wazworski get people to realize the data says something very different from what the connotations are?
Doing things like this, getting on the radio and letting people know. The other side also is that if you look at it, it's more than just the needle exchange program. There's law enforcement involved. There's the prosecutor involved. There's a lot of people whose job is to prevent that stuff from happening. I mean, what would you tell a police officer if there's a needle exchange program in an area, he's on routine patrol, somebody's walked away from the program, and they're sitting there shooting up in the, you know, on the corner of a street, and he sees it. Do they get carte blanche immunity from arrest? They show a card that says, I'm involved in this program, so you can't arrest me.
Well, it seems like I believe both police forces have told us at one time or another that they would not, for instance, station an officer outside of the exchange.
We talked about that last time, too.
But I mean, a crime is a crime. I mean, if you're sitting on on the street corner injecting heroin, you're clearly committing a crime.
Sure. And there is not a police officer in this community that would not obey the law. You know, I know both chiefs, and they're pretty forceful about that. We will obey the law. But do we ignore the problem? No. Do we have a solution? It seems so. It seems that everybody seems to be behind the fact that a mobile unit would probably be the best option. Where is it going to be? I would think that it would be in an area where the population exists. And I would think so for more than just because they want to get the service component taken care of. What a great way to find out how successful it could be. You know, if you think about it, in Greater Lafayette and Tippecanoe County, are we going to have an impact? Is there going to be a measurable impact by providing this service? Or is it going to create a secondary problem amongst drug users?
Forgive me for putting it this way, but it really seems like these two communities, yours and Lafayette, have a big case of the NIMBYs here.
What's that?
Not in my backyard.
Oh, right.
So
right.
It doesn't seem like either you or Mayor Wazworski is all that excited about saying, yes, let's have a physical location in my town. You've both said maybe the mobile thing is the way to go, but neither one of you is really behind saying, well, here's where you can put it, or getting a business owner to, for instance, have their parking lot be the space. And I can see where the business owners might believe the connotation you were talking about, that, oh my gosh, what would happen to my business if I was the one who put the needle exchange there. And we've had a couple of religious organizations say maybe we could be a place to put this, but that really hasn't gained any traction. And so we've had months and months of discussion. There are lots of options here, but nobody, not the mayors, not the businesses, and nobody shy of maybe a couple of churches who have then been overlooked have stepped up to do this thing. When's that going to happen?
There's some realities that always seem to get ignored when we have these conversations. And one of the realities is that if you put it somewhere, let's say hypothetically, we put it up at West Lafayette High School parking lot, how are they going to get there? Again, remember the population base they're serving. You know, another, because they don't travel well, they don't take cabs, they don't have a whole lot of money. It's an issue, a sub sort of set of issues that really.
But doesn't the mobile unit alleviate that problem?
No, if it's in they're not shopping for attics, Dan.
But the mobile unit goes to them.
That's exactly my point. Because when you ask that, what'd you call it, NIMBY?
Yes.
When we talk about NIMBY, I can say not in my backyard, and then put a caveat there because the problem doesn't exist here. Now, don't run over me about saying that, but when you look at the data that we've received from TEAS, the Tippecanoe County Emergency Ambulance Service, and from the police departments about their calls, the number of overdoses that we've had here aren't significant. We've had one since the last time. I haven't read the most recent data, but we've had one.
Okay, but overdoses is not a great way to – it's one way to look at it, but it's actually – it misses a lot of drug users who are using drugs, who are using them –
But
who
then
are,
how
who
do you
using
validate that,
Stan? Killers.
How do you validate that without just making a wild guess? I mean, remember, there's no way to pull that but in order to know where best to go. We got to go with the existing data that we have, and oftentimes that's either police calls or ambulance runs.
Well, you're going to generate data by looking at how many people go to the mobile units, and in no way do I think that us as journalists or the community at large think that if you put the mobile unit in, say, half a dozen sites throughout the county, that you're going to hit on the half a dozen best sites right away. Clearly, you're going to have to dial it in a little bit, figure out which works. Mm-hmm. Some are not going to be well attended. Some are going to be over attended. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be going to the over attended spots over mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. more often. But don't you have to just start it and then see how it works? And that way, won't you generate the data you're talking
you
about?
You have to start it somewhere, though.
And be serving the community while you are generating your data.
You have to start it somewhere where it's going to be successful. You have to start somewhere where you can get a good baseline understanding of the scope of the problem and how to deal with your particular population base that's going to need that service. It's not just a matter of there is a lot of reluctance on the part of folks who are addicted to substances. They don't trust the system. They don't trust that if somebody gives them a kit, that it's going to be free of any real obligation and free of any potential problems down the road.
I have to say I question your entire premise there, because one,
have you ever dealt with a drug addict, Stan?
No.
Have you ever worked in an environment where drug addicts?
I grant you your law enforcement background.
Thank you very much.
But grant me, in our last 90 seconds, me this little bit of logic, which is, we talked about them not, you said they don't travel well, mm-hmm. and yet people can go and find whatever paraphernalia they need to go and inject drugs.
But let me interrupt. Do you know what that paraphernalia can be?
All sorts of things.
It can be a straw.
Sure, I get that.
It can be
a
knife. You know, it can be any kind of kitchen utensil.
All I'm saying is that I think we are worrying too much about broad generalizations about a group of people who come to addiction to drugs in many, many different ways. We're not talking about just recreational drug users. We're, of course, talking about people who have chronic health issues, who get addicted mm-hmm. to painkillers, all mm-hmm. sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying here as we wrap up this program is I hope you and Mayor Wisworski and everybody else can get away from the broad generalizations that I think are coming awful close to dooming this thing from not happening.
But Stan, there has to be a level of understanding of prior experience too. I mean, I have worked with drug addicts. I've arrested drug addicts. I've had to sell drugs to drug addicts when I was undercover. They're not a very dependable population base, and their motivation isn't always to get well. It's to get more drugs.
But you're worried. But here's the last thing we'll say, and I appreciate your time on this program, and we've run out of it, unfortunately, I hope we can get to the people who do want help in this community, and I think we'll continue to talk about them. But thanks for your time, and we'll do it again next month. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these programs archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.